But thank you so much, Sitika Prabhu, for joining us, for being with us. But of course, how was your day? What have you been up to today
My day
at the
was
Bhaktivedanta
wonderful.
Manor?
This afternoon, I was listening to one of your kirtans
Oh,
and felt
no.
very uplifted. So, if anything good comes this evening, a lot of the credit goes to you.
That's very sweet. That's very, very sweet. I don't know how quite to respond to that, but just I really appreciate it. I'm humbled and deeply embarrassed because your kirtans are much sweeter, and I'm really looking forward to the day where I can sit again in your kirtan. I wanted to see
It's been
today.
a wonderful day at the Manor Radhika. The sun is shining and it's very, very peaceful. Today I was with the cows, and it said that when you go and just you're around the cows, any sense of stress or anxiety disappears, and you very much feel in touch again with the natural harmony of life. So it's been a beautiful day, and the positive news is that we're hoping to open up again soon. Invite people back here to experience the spiritual oasis here at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So, yeah, things are looking good, and yeah.
Can't come soon enough for us to again see you in person and also be around the manor, being around the atmosphere. And I guess the first thing that comes to mind is now that things are opening up and we're going back to some form, I want to put it in inverted commas, of normality. What would be your instant thought or piece of advice? Because normally advice comes right at the end of these conversations, but I think it's nice to go straight in. What can people do now that we know that time, in one sense, is short when it comes to this solitude period?
I think change is amazing because change just helps you to discover things you never would have discovered otherwise. In the routines of life, we just our world is what it is, and we don't see much beyond that. And change just gives us that opportunity to see what we didn't see before. And getting back to normality, of course, what's normal? One of our teachers, Bhakti Tirtha Swami, who was like an Afro-American renunciate, extremely charismatic, extremely deep and profound. He used to say, "Those who are considered normal now are people who accept the values and practices of an insane world." So I don't know how we probably don't want to become too normal again, because we might just get back into a routine that doesn't serve our purpose in terms of achieving our potential. So I guess if I were to say advice to myself first before I advise anyone else is, yeah, don't forget the things that we've discovered and learned about ourselves, learned about life, learned about meaning and purpose in these few months where we've begun to question things. And when we get back into the normality of life, let's continue questioning, continue searching. I always love the quote by Einstein. He says, "Curiosity has its own reason for existing." It's really curiosity and searching is part of us. So yeah, I guess we just need to make sure we don't become too normal again.
It's almost like remembering, because I think something that Gauravani, a friend from the US, he said this when he was in this conversation platform. He said that this has been a beautiful opportunity to recognize that we have been drowning. We've been drowning for so long, in so many years. We've been drowning in so many responsibilities that, and even just noticing that the material world is a place of suffering, of drowning. And he was talking about how remembering that fact, or rather coming to realize that fact, is actually such a blessing. And it's so nice that you're speaking about what is normal, inverted commas. What does it mean to have a normal life? And I think that's something that very commonly gets asked around spiritual circles. And from a bhakti perspective, maybe you can shed some light on that. What is considered actually, in an absolute level, or spiritually speaking, what is normal if this isn't normal?
Well, from a bhakti perspective, we know bhakti means love. To live a life inspired by love is normal. That's real normal. Nowadays, we think that's the the cherished aspiration, that's something we're aiming for, and surely we are. But really, that's just life. Life is about love. Love for the divine and love for everyone around us, to love what you're doing in life, to love getting up every morning and feeling inspired, to have every conversation and every interaction with someone else infused with a background of loving selflessness. This is life. And the danger of the normal material world that we are about to re-enter again soon is that it can sometimes lead us into a life which is opposite to love. Right. Love is about giving, but so much of life in the world today is about taking and about me. Love is about selflessness, but so much of life today is about selfishness. Love is about sacrificing, but you know, so much of life today is about expecting. So in this way, it's a love, a life inspired by love. I don't know if that sounds a bit 60s.
maybe I was one
of these in my previous life, someone in the 60s. But really, that's what it is. It's all about love, because love is what we seek, you know. And without love, there's no meaning. Right. So, a life inspired by love is a normal life.
Wow, that's such a wonderful one sentence to kind of sum up. What is it that we're really looking for? What is the real normal? It's a life inspired by love. And I know that so many people have been suffering from traits of loneliness during this time, or a deep desire to again come into the association of like-minded souls, or just friends and family, etc. And a life inspired by love, does that necessarily mean that we should be, I'm just going to go for it in the gross perspective, in terms of finding a partner, you know, is it that we're lacking just to find companionship, or is there a deeper meaning of love that you're contemplating here?
Very nice. Yeah, when we think of love, we think of companionship, a relationship of intimacy like that. Of course, nowadays we even use the word love very cheaply. You know, I love Bruce, right. So I love that. I love that movie. What is love? That is a deep question to ask. In an ancient Sanskrit work by one of the great teachers called Rupa Goswami, he defines love, anya bhilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktirutama. And the essence of it, he says, anya means anything else, abhilas means desire, shunyam means zero, nothing. So when you come to a state where you're interacting with something or someone or some situation where you have no agenda, where you have no ulterior motive, where you have no kind of thing that you're trying to gain from it, then you're functioning in love. So that could be in a relationship with a partner, that can be in a relationship with a community of people, your family. It can be in relationship to the divine. You know, like people connect with the divine, but then they go with a shopping list. You know, like, give me a house by the sea, a color TV, a 20 million gigabyte MP3. So how much love is there then in that connection, really? But when we go, I think it was the Buddha. Someone asked the Buddha, what's the difference between liking and loving? And he said, you see that flower over there? If you like it, you'll go over to it, you'll pick it, and you'll smell it. But if you love it, you'll go over to it, and you'll water it, and you'll protect it.
Wow.
So I think we have to look at love in a deeper way. Love is very much about the purity of one's intention. Purity of intention brings love. And so we can express love in anything we do, a relationship, an activity, depending on the purity of intention. Like you can, like, peel a banana out of love. Did you ever think about peeling a banana out of love And in the ancient stories of the Vedas, it's talked about of how one character, she peeled a banana out of love for Krishna. And she was in so much love for Krishna that instead of giving the banana to Krishna, she gave the peel. And you know what? Krishna was over the moon because he was feeling the love.
That's so beautiful. And I guess it's something that we're all hankering for. I think it's very clear that humanity is looking for loving relationships and also to express love. It's very clear that if someone just takes a step back from their normal lives and just observes, like an artist who steps away from a piece of his work, his art, his painting, just stepping back from life and just observing that love is what centers our lives, our activities are so much gravitated towards acting out of love or receiving love. So what you're speaking about makes complete sense. I think what comes to mind, and by the way, anyone that's listening to this, please hit up any comments. If anything is really resonating with you, you know to hit that love button so we know you're there and alive. But if there's any questions, any comments, please drop them in the comment section because we'd love to just kind of build this conversation around your thoughts as well. But what came to mind for me was this idea of untainted love. You spoke about the pure love that is not motivated by selfishness. Now, this sounds quite lofty. This sounds like something that, you know, will I ever reach that? Is that even possible? Is that something that we should even be aiming for if it's not attainable? So I want to pose that question to you. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. And I think that's a sign of a good teacher and a good student. They're looking at the reality of where we're at. They're looking at the ideal of where we want to be, but they're always conscious about what's achievable right now. And so I think that's a great learning technique to think like, because if we only focus on the ideal, it becomes too intimidating or unrealistic.
Right.
Radhika, I think it's like this. We all experience moments of love. There's moments in our day when we just do something for the love of it. There's moments in our day where we see someone and we just think, you know what, I want to help that person. And there's moments in the day where we think, you know what, I can't be bothered, you know.
Yep.
We're going in and out of moments of love. And as we go in and out of those moments of love, we get some taste, like you know, like in ancient Eastern culture, one of the big things is that they would never eat like a buffet style where like people queue up and then you have your plate and then, you know, they give you one item each. In Eastern style, everyone would sit down to eat like at the same time. And then a few willing souls would say like, okay, I'm going to sacrifice my eating to serve everyone else.
Right.
You know, and that can be hard when, you know, you're hungry. But you know what would happen? The few willing souls that would say, you know what, I'm just going to serve everyone. And they would just go down the road, like serving everyone. Like, would you like some more? Can I, you know, see, you know, what would happen is seeing their satisfaction. You, at the end of it, you'd just be like, you know what? I don't even need to eat. I'm like absolutely fine.
Right.
So for anyone listening out there, this is a great diet program. Just serve others food and you won't want to eat food.
But, right.
No, but on a serious note, you see what I'm saying? Like we have moments of love. And so we shouldn't become discouraged and think, oh no, I'm a really selfish person. I'll never be like that selfless. No. We all experience it. And what we have to do is we have to build our experiences of love by sometimes forcing ourselves to be a bit more selfless than we actually feel like. And when we do that, we make that extra step. We enter another world and we think like, wow, that's amazing. Like, I'd like to go to that space again. And we start moving from a very selfish life to a very selfless life. We see relationships become deeper. We see just everything just blossoms when you're selfless. It's such a beautiful quality. I think we just have to experience those moments, relish them, and then bring them more and more into our life.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't normally counter that, but I can completely vibe with that. And only because I've had experience of that. I think everyone that's listening, you probably had experience of that also. When you're giving something to someone, this is most commonly perhaps within a parent and child relationship. You know, if you're a parent and you have a child, I know Kate's listening, and I know that there are a few other parents that are listening right now. Mm-hmm. When you're giving to your child, you're selflessly giving. You're not giving in the hope that one day the child is going to give you something back. In that moment, you're giving something out of love. And that selfless love, once having tasted it, you know that there is the possibility of experiencing selfless love. And I remember very clearly another example when I was in this holy space of Vrindavan in India.
I knew you were going to talk about Vrindavan. I knew it.
How can I not? but whilst in Vrindavan, I remember going to the house of a Goswami who looks after one of the temples in a place called Nandagram. So this Goswami, he is a priest, and he invited a group of us to his home, and we sat on the floor, and there was banana leaf, and you know, something impelled me to just help him to serve rather than eat myself. And you're right, it's in the act of giving, we really do find a new dimension opens up almost. And I've experienced this so many times, and we can maybe go into the Vrindavan topic a little bit, a sacred space topic. But why do you think it is that, is it just an Indian thing, or do you think it's culturally like, that it's there in the culture, therefore we experience it more? Or do you think it's something else? Is there something about the India factor that I experienced that, or do you think there's something else about that Vrindavan mood or the bhakti culture?
Vrindavan is special because it's a place in which the spiritual energy is very, very accessible. Mm. You know, like, I don't know if you've ever, like, if you ever go to, for example, a room where people have done like years and years of meditation, or like, for example, here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, we have a temple room, and there's like, you know, five decades of chanting, kirtan being done there. People come into that room, you don't need to say anything. They feel the energy. They feel nice. The energy of the love that's been deposited there. Vrindavan is the place of Krishna. Krishna is the reservoir of all love. And in Vrindavan, Krishna and his devotees have exchanged so much love. And to this day, for centuries, devotees are chanting, serving there out of love every single day. They say New York is the city that never sleeps. But I tell you, Vrindavan is the city that never sleeps. Because there's no ignorance. Even when they're sleeping, they're dreaming of Krishna, they're... So it's just a place which is infused with bhakti. So when you go into such a place, when you enter into it, you may enter. Sometimes I enter Vrindavan and I feel like I'm out of place here. You know, like I'm a miser. I'm not that devotional. But it grows on you and it inspires your heart. And so that's why we go to sacred spaces, because they really inspire a selflessness within us. And we've been to Vrindavan and we've seen, you know, the selflessness that people exhibit. And it really is about seva, this Sanskrit word, seva, which means to serve. It's interesting, in Sanskrit you have different words for a servant. And one of the words for a servant is kinkara. Mm-hmm. K-I-N-K-A-R-A, kinkara. And it literally means, kin means what, and kara means to do. So literally the Sanskrit word for a servant, kinkara, means what can I do for you? Right. And it's as simple as that. When we are with people, if you're a leader and you're looking at all of your people and you say, what can I do to serve you? Then you're a real leader. If you're a parent and you look at your children and you say, what can I do to serve you? You're a real parent. If you're a husband or a wife and you look at your partner and say, what can I do to serve you? You're really going to get to the depths of what that relationship means. And similarly, when you go to the divine, you don't go with the shopping list. You say, what can I do for you? Right. And it's funny that, you know, I became a monk and I never thought I'd be talking about love so much. Like, I'm a monk, man. Like, I'm not supposed to be talking about love. I'm not a love doctor. One said to me, "Hey, Sutapa, you're a love doctor." I'm like, "I'm a monk. I'm not a love doctor." So, but you only talk about love, you know? And then once I was in an event, and then someone said to me, "Hey, what do you guys believe in, arranged marriages or love marriages? In this sense, love is when the boy and girl of their own volition come together.
Right.
Like, do you believe in arranged marriages or love marriages?" I'm like, "Why are you asking me that question?" Like, I'm not... And then I thought about it and I said, "You know what? Let me ask you a question. Do arranged marriages always have love in them?" And the person said, "Sometimes they work out very lovingly and sometimes not." I said, "And what about love marriages where people come together without any arrangement? Are they always loving?" I said, "Well, sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't."
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "You know what? It doesn't matter how two people come together. What's going to matter is what do they do after they're together?
Right.
What kind of commitment do they show to each other? What kind of service do they do to each other?
Right.
What are they willing to sacrifice for each other? That's going to determine the level of love."
Wow.
So I guess I've just gone a bit full circle there, but Vrindavan is that place where so much loving exchange has gone on, so that every particle of Vrindavan is like infused with that energy. Therefore, you go to Vrindavan, you see like people rolling around in the dust. You're like, "Yo, well, why are these people rolling around in the dust?" Like, it's strange, but it's because love pervades every particle of that land.
Right.
And it affects the consciousness. So, yeah.
That's so, I mean, so beautifully and poetically spoken. And I can very much concur that as you're speaking, almost like these visions are coming to my mind of moments in my life where I've experienced. Yeah, it's you know, and while you were speaking about rolling in the dust, I was with His Holiness Sachinandana Swami, who's also been on this podcast. And there was a moment where we were by the banks of this holy river. It's called the River Yamuna. And he said, "Okay, so now we're going to roll in the dust." And I kind of looked at him double and said, "Roll in the dust." I said, "Yeah, we'll roll in the dust." And, you know, in that moment, I'll be honest with you, when I rolled in the dust, my mind was thinking, "Oh, it's not so clean to do this. Like, what will happen to my clothes? And now I have to send them off to the laundry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." And I reflected afterwards that it wasn't so much the activity. Why did I do the activity? That's what I was reflecting. Why did I do it? And it was because, not because I loved the activity itself, but because there was love for the person that was suggesting I do that activity. And so love commands so much of that space. And I think it's the same when it comes to service, when it comes to serving others. Sometimes it may not be that we're inclined to, you know, be of service to others, be an instrument of seva. But when there's love for divinity, when there's love for God's creatures, for Krishna's parts and parcels, then I think that it becomes natural. It's like that. It's if you saw your brother or sister in need, if you saw your child or your parent in need, then there's no question of whether the activity is something you like or not. It's a matter of love is in the space. So you're going to do it regardless. And so I very much vibe with everything you're speaking about when it comes to how bhakti infuses love and seva. I wanted to ask you, now we're going to change a little direction towards another thing that I'm really very much passionate about, which is mantra and chanting. And for anyone that's listening, I'm sure that either you're connected to the school of bhakti or you're connected with me. And so you must have heard of kirtan, you must have heard of chanting or mantra. And I wanted to ask about your relationship with chanting. Where did it start? Has it always been a love relationship, or has there been moments where it's like walking through a desert with a tongue? And how can we maybe get out of the desert, so to speak?
Yeah. The Hare Krishna mantra is, it leaves an impression on you. Mm. Like every year we go to Amsterdam for like, you know, like a big, like a street procession and chanting.
Right.
And to this day, every time I go on that procession, I can remember when I was about 5 or 6 years old, my parents had taken me to Amsterdam and I saw a chanting party on the street.
Wow.
And to this day, I can remember the exact place. It's right near Dam Square. I can remember the exact place in Amsterdam where I saw that Harinam, the street chanting going on, because the mantra just is powerful, no? It's just like leaves an impression. Sometimes it leaves a favorable impression. Sometimes people think like, this is strange. Sometimes you immediately feel touched by it, sometimes not. But one thing's for sure, there's something about that vibration that's unforgettable. Right. Because it's intrinsically linked to who we are. Because it said that the sound vibration, nama namino, is said in Sanskrit, that the nama, the sound vibration, the name, and the person is indicating the supreme divinity, Krishna. They're not different, they're the same. So how can you come in contact with such a personality and not remember it and not have it leave an impression on you? So the mantra is powerful. And I remember the first time I heard Srila Prabhupada chanting. Mm. That was also like profound. It was such a simple tune. And it was, you could almost hear the desperation in the voice. It was more than music. It was a cry of the heart. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like, wow, this is like chanting. It's not just music. It's really a heartfelt expression. And then over the years, yeah, many amazing experiences and many difficult times as well. Every day we're here at the manor. So like, whether you like it or not, everyone's alarm clock goes up at like... You know, some people's alarm clocks go up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and somehow or other they sleep right through it, but no one else can. whichever, for whatever reason, we're always up early, and then every morning at 5 a.m., the hand goes into the bead bag. Mm-hmm. And Radhika, what to say? Like some days the beads feel very, very heavy, you know. And it's tough, you know, the million thoughts whiz through the mind. And then you have to kind of coach your mind, like, okay, in 2 hours, I'll come back to it. You know, I just need this space. I need to focus. And you try to build a meditation. You try to build a connection. Some days are better than other days. And even on the days where it feels dry and the days where you have to really concentrate, maybe the days where you really don't want to, but you continue on, are the days when you actually begin to forge a much deeper connection with the Holy Name. Everything counts. Every moment with the Holy Name counts. Even the difficult ones, even the dry ones, even the ones when it feels ritualistic. Because when you keep going back and you go beyond just trying to get an external experience, and you say, no, I have dedication in my relationship with the name. You see, it's not just the chanting the name, it's a relationship with the name. Yeah. A relationship with the sound vibration. So it's all like that. Relationship sometimes, you know, I won't put you on the spot, but you're a married man. And you know that sometimes the relationship, you need a break, you know. I mean, I can imagine it may happen. You know, I'm a monk, so
sure.
Married people come and talk to me. You know, I know the inside story. But it's a relationship. It's a commitment. Right. And after decades of such commitment, there is something very profound about the connection you forge with people, and the same thing with the name.
Right. I totally agree. And Govindji, who's from LA, and he has this beautiful space called the Bhakti Yoga Shala there, influencing thousands of people there. He's really vibing with what you're speaking about. And he said, every moment with the Holy Name counts. It's something that Sutta Prabhu just spoke. And I totally agree. It's even in the moments where you don't want to be in the practice. I heard this beautiful quote by Satchinandana Swami. He says that, never fear to go all the way, because the truth anyways lies beyond it. And it's this case with the mantra, that never fear to go all the way with the mantra, even when you're not feeling it, even when you're not in a space where you're ecstatically chanting the name. But in the tough moments, in the dry desert moments, never fear to go all the way and continue to be committed, because the truth anyway lies beyond it. And I very much have experienced this. And I'm sure that any of you who have come in contact with chanting, there are days where you're in the kirtan, but you're not really there. You're sat there with your thoughts of the past, thoughts of the future, but not anywhere in the present. And why do we stay there? Why do we remain in that space? Is it because we're thinking that, yeah, I just want to be in the circle of social proximity, or I want to be with my friends, or I want to seem like I'm deep? There might be an element of that, but also because we recognize on a deeper platform that every moment counts with this chanting process, with the mantra, with the holy name. And I love how you were sharing about Nama Nam, you know, not being different, that divinity and Krishna, Rama, Radha are infused with this chanting in the name.
One thing I wanted to, if I
please,
may interject there,
please.
And I don't want to take you off your track of thought,
please.
One of our great teachers, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, a real, like, yeah, such a personality. When Srila Prabhupada, who founded the Hare Krishna movement, he was said, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was his spiritual master. So they asked Srila Prabhupada, can you say something about your spiritual master? Srila Prabhupada said, what can I say about him? He was a Vaikuntha man. Vaikuntha means the spiritual realm. So he was someone from a different realm. So, I mean, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had amazing, incredible insights. And one thing he said is that Hari Kirtan, the chanting of Hari's names, the chanting of Krishna's names, Hari Kirtan and Hari Katha must go hand in hand. Just as we never approach Krishna without Radha. Without Radha, you will not be able to approach Krishna. You know, you're a Vrindavan man. When you go to Vrindavan, more than Krishna, they will say Radhe Radhe, because they know through Radharani you can get Krishna.
Yeah.
So Radharani in Sanskrit terminology is known as Swarup Shakti. Swarup Shakti means the internal energy. The Shaktiman, the Krishna and the Swarup, they're inseparable. Mm. They must be taken together. That's the complete understanding of the divine couple. Mm. And in the same way, Hari Kirtan without Hari Katha is incomplete.
Yeah.
And therefore, what Hari Katha, and I should explain, Hari Katha means the talks of Krishna, the talks of Hari, the talks of the divinity, the journey into discovering the transcendental personality whom we're trying to connect with. Those talks add another dimension to your Hari Kirtan.
Right.
So many people may do Hari Kirtan, but the moment they begin doing Hari Katha, they will find that when they turn to the holy name, they begin to see more and they get more entrance. And and that's life, you know. Like, I've been fortunate to live at the manor for like 18 years now. It's
wow.
Really amazing. That's my great fortune. In ISKCON terminology, they say he's a mercy case. I'm a mercy case. I needed this kind of mercy. But you know, like, I can't imagine a day goes by without having Hari Kirtan and Hari Katha. It's just become like, that's your sustenance.
Mm-hmm.
So nowadays, I just can't imagine what it would be like to go a day without having a kirtan with others and discussing talks of Hari with others. Is so nourishing to the soul. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there.
I'm so glad you did.
You know, Hari Katha and Hari Kirtan, do it together and then experience the double whammy.
Right. Yeah. You know, there's this one thing, I think it was from your side that you said these three P's. I don't remember where you said it, but I've heard it being repeated so much during this time of solitude. Regarding philosophy, practice, and people. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So it very much goes in hand with what you're speaking about, that the practice of chanting needs to be backed by philosophy, needs to be hand in hand with understanding the philosophy, understanding these wonderful talks of divinity of Krishna, Rama. The question that immediately comes to me, which is surrounding how do we know when something is authentic Harikatha? Because now I'm noticing very much in the space of Instagram, in the space of virtual reality, there are so many people speaking Harikatha, and how can we tell whether something is authentic? What should we learn from everyone? Should we be open-eared and hearing from every source? How can we differentiate? How can we discern what sources we should hear from when it comes to Harikatha, when it comes to philosophy in general?
Yeah, this is a nice point.
Mm.
In the ancient system of Vedic learning, then there is a almost like a check and balance known as Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. So there are the Shastras, the ancient revelations of the talks of Hari and the pastimes and narrations of Hari. And then there are the Gurus who have dedicated their lives to sharing those talks of Hari, the illustrious personalities over the generations who have brought us those teachings. And then there are the Sadhus, the saintly people who relish those talks present them without any ego, without any sense of trying to bring attention to themselves, without doing it as a living, with great transparency in order to inspire someone's heart. So basically, one must hear Harikatha from such a saintly person, a sadhu, someone who has learned from Guru. Because you cannot learn about divinity directly. I liked your example about Sachinandana Swami, who told you to roll in the dust, because the spiritual master is the master of love, and they take you to that relationship of love. We go through it via medium. And so one can only become a sadhu if one has learned from another sadhu, a guru. And that person is only a guru if what they are talking is based on authentic Shastra. Mm-hmm. So therefore, yes, we must hear from the right person. In another ancient Sanskrit verse, it said, Avaishnav mukod girnam bhutam harikathamritam shravanam neva kartavyam sarpochistam yatha payah. That if one hears from someone, they may have the best voice, they may have the best musical abilities, they must have the best tunes under the sun. But if they are a Vaishnav, Mukodgir, if they have not internalized that dedication and that purity of consciousness, Shravanam Naiva Kartavyam, do not listen from them, because Sarpochista Yathapayaha is almost like milk, pure, nourishing, beautiful, the miracle food, milk, but which has been touched by the lips of a serpent and therefore has become poisonous. It's very strong, actually, very strong verse. Mm-hmm. We must hear from sincere people. Going back to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, sometimes he would tell the people to sing who were the ones who had no musical ability. They could not hold a note. But he would tell them to sing, because they would sing from the heart. They would sing with purity. And when someone sings from the heart, it will affect your heart. So character is so important, so important. Because you see, like, when you hear from someone, you don't just take the information that they're giving you.
Mm-hmm.
You're also taking their conviction. You're also taking on their desires. You're also taking on their inspiration. So if one is having a material inspiration, if one is having a material motive, then you also, to some extent, become infused with that. So we must try to hear from the saintly. The saintly may know more or less. The saintly may be good singers or not good singers. The saintly may be able to present in dynamic ways or maybe not. But the saintly, if you hear from them, they will touch your heart. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in a Bengali verse, Jaha Bhagavata Pada Vaishnaverastane Ekanta Ashraya Kare Chaitanya Charane. He says, if you want to learn Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam is ancient scripture, talks of Hari. You want to learn Bhagavatam, then Jada Bhagavata Pada, Vaishnava, go to the, sit at the feet of a great saintly person and just drink the vibration. So yeah, that we must. That's why I'm talking to you.
I was just about to say, that's what I'm hearing from you. That's why I want to hear so much from you. It almost makes me choke up almost hearing from you, because it's so much what I've been yearning to hear for almost 2 months. And I wanted this to be shared through this medium. And I'm so glad you're doing this. I'm just reflecting on moments where I've come into contact with those who I consider to be saintly. And a lot of the time, it's not been through my own searching. It's almost kind of like I've stumbled across that association, stumbled into that. And on reflection, of course, one realizes that it's by divine mercy, through the blessings that are coming from top down. That's how one finds and comes into contact with such sadhu, such wonderful, custodians of faith. Mm. And I'm just trying to think, what would be my sincere advice to anyone who's listening right now that is now yearning so much to hear from those who, as you were describing, those personalities that you were describing, what would be your thoughts or what would be your comments on for anyone who's now listening and thinking, I really need to find the association of such persons, but is it possible to find them or is it something that comes your way through divine mercy?
Saintly people are like clouds. Sometimes they rain and they shower, and sometimes they're peacefully in the sky, somewhat in their own realm, looking amazing, but maybe we don't have so much connection. One cannot force saintly people into their life. It is entirely their goodness of heart that they reach out. The saintly people, they reach out. That's the good news. Someone may think the bad news is I can't find a saint of my own power. That's terrible news. But the good news is the saints are reaching out. Mm. In the ancient Bhagavatam, there's the story of Prahlad. He's a boy saint. I mean, he's incredible. He's just young. He comes from a background which, you know, like some people say, like, I got a bad background, I got a bad track record, you know? Like, if you look at his family background, we won't go into the details, but it wasn't good, but he was saintly. And then in a beautiful verse, in his spiritual maturity, he says, Prayena deva munayo savimukti kama monam charanti vijanena parathanishta netan vihaya kripanan vimumuksha eko na chanyameko. Pichirad vichinvan. He says, Prayena deva munayo savimukti kama. There are many saintly people, many yogis, but most of them go to the Himalayas. And they go and in their own solitude, they practice spiritual life and make their life a success. But he said, I'm a saintly person who has a different perspective. I'm of the opinions that the saintly people should come down into the cities. They should come down into the places where people are suffering and we should go to try and help them. And this compassion is the essence of saintliness. And so Prahlad Maharaj sets the tone for what saintliness means, that open-heartedness and the compassion. Mm. So the great news is that saintly people are reaching out. And so how do we attract it? We can never force it, but we can attract saintly association. And how do we do that? Prayer. The language of the heart is so powerful. What is your prayer in your heart? Not just the prayer of your lips. Can I have an association of a saintly person? What is the prayer of your heart? What do you want in your life? Do you want a saintly person? Do you desire purity? Do you want someone to come into your life to do a transcendental operation on you. Let me say another thing. Saintly people aren't always full of flowery words as well. In the ancient Mahabharata, it said politicians have words like butter, but a heart like a razor. And saintly people have a heart like butter, but their words can sometimes be like a razor.
So true.
But what do they use that razor for? They use that razor to come into your life. Shanta eva syachindanti manovyasanga muktibi. Their razor sharp words come into your life and cut all of your material attachments so that you can live freely. So we must desire to have a saintly person in our life. And then we have to remember that when saintly people come, they sometimes rock the boat a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
They shake it up, you know,
for
but
sure.
All for the good.
Sorry,
that was a long-winded answer, but in essence, let us in our hearts pray, because the saintly are reaching out and our prayer will attract people in our life who can then give us the right guidance.
Thank you. And please don't ever feel afraid to speak. It's not about long or short answers. It's about getting the point across in a way which is digestible. And if you guys, I can see so many comments of encouragement, and we can see the love hearts flowing. And so it's clear that many people are very much engaged in this conversation. We've got 10 minutes left, and I wanted to turn now to seeing something of current relevance, which is, what is currently of inspiration for you right now? You mentioned at the beginning about being with the cows. And I think when we first had our Instagram live conversation, you were relishing the fact that the manor, the Bhaktivedanta manor in Hertfordshire, had become like a real monastery. And so I wanted to see, what is on your mind at the moment? What does Sutapa Prabhu do right now? What is he reading at the moment? What is he inspired by right now, personally? And I think that many people would be curious to hear, because you're being asked so many questions by, according to what my desires are to hear, but I want to hear, what do you want to share that's of inspiration right now?
There are many things which are inspiring me now. Study always inspires me somehow or other. I have my moments of being a bookworm, so I go in and out. And right now I'm really studying the Bhagavad Gita again, which is like on Saturday. This is not an advert break, just put it out there. So next Saturday, we're going to begin like a little course on the Bhagavad Gita online. So it's a great chance.
Wow.
You know, for me, I'll be honest with you, and this is not, I'm not saying it out of humility. When I try to share with others, I know that I'm giving them something good, because I know what I'm giving them is priceless in terms of the wisdom. I know I'm very aware of my own inabilities to share it appropriately. But the main thing I love about teaching is that it just forces you to just internalize it, understand it, edify your realization of the subject matter. So I'm just really relishing reading the Gita. Sometimes the most profound things in life are just very, very simple. And the Bhagavad Gita just drives home simple points. Simple points. Yesterday we were with all the monks in the evening, and we just talked about simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We just spent like 1.5 hours going around the room, just, and everyone was sharing their thoughts on what does it mean to be simple. And I just think, like, so maybe that's something which is on my mind a lot nowadays, because my life tends to get complicated. And I'm just thinking, like, simple philosophy, simple, sincere interactions with others, simplicity in my habits, in my lifestyle, and all of this simplicity, which, as Srila Prabhupada said, simple living, high thinking, is really like on my mind. So yeah, I guess, yeah, simplicity maybe is something.
Wonderful.
That our teacher, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who we mentioned a few times in this call, he had an aphorism, Saralata a Vaishnava Dharma. That simplicity is Vaishnavism. Simplicity is spirituality. Simple in habits, simple in conduct, simple in character. It doesn't mean, simplicity doesn't mean naive. It doesn't mean, less like your head in the clouds. Simplicity means the simplicity and purity of a child. To somehow rediscover them. So yeah, I guess as life gets more complicated for me in so many ways, in terms of responsibilities, complexities of management, I think I still got some management karma to burn off in this lifetime. So try as hard as I can to escape it, I can't. And in the midst of all that complexity, I try to take a few moments every day and remember, you know what, Sutapa, relax. Life is simple, and spiritual life is simple. And in the midst of all the complexity, don't complicate it too much. Focus on the essence. So yeah, maybe we could have another conversation sometime about
simplicity. I'm fully into it. I think I'm always game to speak with. To be honest, it's less about speaking with you and more about me hearing from you. Because it's something I'm going to have to rewatch this and hear so many of the wonderful points, because I'm someone who is slowly increasing in desire for wanting to become deep, and not for the purpose of then being recognized for that, but rather I'm trying to build a desire of pure depth, that I want to be someone who can then assimilate the knowledge and share it with others. And I think that in everyone's respect, no matter who you are, you're a beacon of light for someone else. And I think that you can only give what you have. And so we should be very eager and enthusiastic to hear from persons such as Sutapa. And so with your permission, I'm going to try and wring your arm again to try and hook one of these up again. If you guys
I wanted to say that I really appreciate all of the work that yourself, Kirtan London, all of the different individuals who are using social media and all of these different platforms, how you utilize it to give spiritual knowledge to people. You know, like sometimes we also have a doubt ourselves, like I'm putting myself out there, like is there a bit of ego there? Maybe I'm doing it for some ulterior motive. How pure is it really? And all of these things come up. And I think it requires a brave person to come out and say, you know what, this is Radhika Das on Instagram. I'm putting my website out there. I'm putting things out there. But you know what? I may not be perfect. I may not be, you know, as pure as, you know, I'd like to be. But you know what? I know that by sharing this, by giving this, I'll purify myself. And everything that may be there that's diverting me will gradually be cleansed away. And it requires a brave person to do that. So I really appreciate that you do that. And I'm more like a hermit style person. So like, still here I am on Instagram. Hermits also come on Instagram sometimes. But you know, so then I really appreciate people who come out and extend themselves in forums like this, because it requires you to also do a lot of internal work. Because pride, desire for name and fame, these things come to everyone. And then you put yourself in a situation where you're in the spotlight. But I really appreciate that you genuinely try to do it with depth and to serve others. And therefore, I'm sure you'll be successful and you'll help many people.
Thank you so much for your blessing. And now it's live. It's hopefully going to come true that, you know, I can try and do something. It's not that I'm so great, but the message is so beautiful that it has to be shared, and has to be available for people in the places where they are, which is nowadays on this amazing platform of Instagram. So if the platform changes tomorrow, then we will try and adapt ourselves so that the message can be nicely given and there for people when they need it most. So thank you so much for this beautiful interaction. I'm very grateful to you for your time. And I will for sure be in touch again for another session, hopefully soon. But if you want to sign up to that course that Sita Prabhu was speaking about, you can go to the School of Bhakti website at schoolofbhakti.com/courses/Gita-life. If that's too much to remember, just Google School of Bhakti and I'm sure you'll find it. But if there's anything else that we can help you with, please feel free to drop us a direct message. I'm sure the teams on both sides would love to be able to connect with you, and we'd love to help you in whatever way we can to serve your journey so that you can find a life which is more fulfilled, full of love, full of joy, full of deep satisfaction. So please do get in touch with us. If you took any screenshots of this conversation, please do drop them in the stories so that way we can share this and we can spread the conversation further. We can reach many, many more hundreds of people. But I'm so honored that so many of you have joined us to be part of this. Just a few shout-outs, if you don't mind, Sita Prabhu. This is the Instagram way.
Sure, sure, go for it.
We have to please encourage everyone.
Comments, yeah.
Aisha, Shilpa, Darsha, Grahana, Kate, thank you so much for being here. Kusum, Vanita, my mum's even here. Hello, mum. to Govindas in LA. I hope your LA family are well, and I hope everything's well at the Bhakti Yoga Shala. But from our side, from all of us here, we want to thank you once again. Thank you, Sita Prabhu. And we will again connect soon, but hopefully see you at the manor in person again soon. All the best.
All the best. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.